Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Nerd Stash Show. My name is Taylor Cole and I will be your host today. We are on number 85 of this podcast. This week on the show, we're going to have another installment of Clash of the Stash. And honestly, we kind of picked a bad time to do one of these Clash of the Stash episodes because of all the news going around the gaming industry right now. We just wanted to have a fun episode going into our Thanksgiving break. And I'm sure we'll have a lot of stuff to say on a few of those news stories when we get back from our break. Anyway, let's get into this installment of Clash at the Stash. If you don't know, Clash at the Stash is a ridiculously dumb collaboration series from those of us at TNS Network where two competitors will debate over two nerd culture topics and make a case on why their pick is better. At the end of each installment, our judge determines a winner based on what was said and how entertaining they were. We've done a few episodes of Clash at the Stash already on our podcast, so I'm not going to go over the whole spiel again, besides what I already said. But I still want to give you guys a rundown on what you can expect from this episode as a listener. We'll start this episode with our opening statements. Basically, our competitors will share the premise of their case, an attempt to entice both you, the listener, and the judge. Then both competitors will lay out their main case. This is where the competitors will do anything in their power to convince the judge why their topic is better. They can use facts, logic, personal stories, or even bash the opponent's topic. After that, the judge will ask for rebuttal from both people. This is their chance to defend themselves or attack their opponent's case. When the rebuttals are done, the judge will have 2 to 3 secret categories or questions for our competitors. The competitors have no ideas what these questions are, by the way. That way we have a balance between the stuff they have prepared and their ability to talk off the cuff about their topic. The judge will then ask the competitors for their closing statements. This is their last chance to sway the judge. Finally, the judge will deliver their final verdict based on what the competitors said and how entertaining they were. The winner will then close out the show with our usual ending segments. Alright, let's get into this installment of Clash at the Stash. What game or game franchise should everyone be thankful for? Oh, and one last note, I did not tell my two competitors here about this, but the first person to hit 5 wins at Clash at the Stash will be crowned the first ever Clash at the Stash champion for our podcast. This can be someone from our podcast team or someone we bring on from elsewhere. Also, whoever ends up being the champion will have to occasionally defend their title on one of our podcasts. But anyways, let's get into our introductions. In one corner, we have a man who has done so much in the gaming news world, from writing content to podcasting with us here at the Nerd Stash, to being an editor-in-chief over at Bago Games. And today, he's stepping into what easily has to be the dumbest situation he's ever found himself in since starting his career in the gaming media world. He's undefeated. He's 0-0, but still, he's not lost yet at this thing. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Mosley. Michael, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. And I'm pretty sure I've been to some pretty gnarly things, so this might actually be the least dumbest thing I've ever had to do.
I appreciate you sugarcoating it, but I don't believe you. And in the other corner, we have someone who is undefeated in Clash of the Stash, coming in with an impressive 1-0 record that I may or may not still be attempting to appeal. She's just getting started in gaming media, but I have to admit, she's definitely the favorite coming into this Clash due to her record. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Riley Logue. Riley, how do you intend to stay undefeated?
I will be the first person to get to 5 wins and 0 losses. I'm saying it right here, right now. I am really confident that I'm going to be, might I add, I'm actually undefeated. I have won. I have been through the ringer once and I won. Came out the other side. So I'm excited to get into it.
Well, let's just get into it, I guess. I didn't reveal either of your topics, by the way. So the audience needs to know that now. And what better way to do that than to have our opening statements? Riley, you are the one who does have a win at Clash of the Stash, so we'll start with you. What game or game franchise should everyone be thankful for?
Yeah, so when you first posed this question to us, what should everybody, what singular game or game series should everybody be thankful for? And the immediate answer that came to my head is a little game that released on June 23rd, 1996 for the Nintendo 64. Super Mario 64. I will lay out to you why, through my main case and in my opening statement, why Super Mario 64 is a game that, regardless of what type of games that you play, you should be thankful for Mario 64. You should be thankful for it because it is, while it wasn't the first 3D game to release, I consider it to be the first true 3D game to release, in the sense that it got everything that it got everything right about 3D that we take for granted today, such as the independent camera, which was so novel at the time, by the way, that they had to explain it with adding a character. Just they had to explain the concept of having a movable camera, where every other 3D game at the time had a fixed camera. So if you think about Crash Bandicoot or Resident Evil, which I would say Resident Evil wasn't even truly 3D in the sense of the way that Super Mario 64 was, because Resident Evil, like I said, it had its fixed camera, but it also had pre-rendered backgrounds, which Super Mario 64 didn't have. And not only is it a game that changed gaming from a design perspective, but it's also a game that changed gaming from a technical perspective as well. So that is why I believe that Super Mario 64, basically any game that you play nowadays, as long as it's not an indie game, basically, if it's set in a 3D environment, you should be thankful for Super Mario 64, because that was the game that set the bar, really. That's kind of what showed other developers what to do. It laid the template going forward.
That's a very interesting pick. And that's just your opening statement, correct?
Correct.
That is a strong opening statement from Riley, and a very interesting pick. Michael, what is your game that everybody should be, game or game franchise that everyone should be thankful for? Because I believe you picked a game franchise, didn't you?
I did. I picked a franchise. It's mostly because it is so influential, just as influential as Mario 64. But yes, I decided to go with the Metal Gear franchise.
Share with us your opening statement. What are you attempting to tell the audience and myself as the judge on what is your goal here with your case?
Well, mostly go match the match with Riley's technical aspects. I will be explaining how Metal Gear practically changed gaming as we've seen it as a whole, and excuse me, and how it transitioned from a top-down action game to mostly stealth and espionage, and how it has changed the way we see stories and video games, including the technology that's powering these games as well.
I think both of you have very excellent picks here for various different reasons, and both games or game franchises have such an impact on what I think like modern games are today, and both have led to this boom in video games. So I'm very interested to see what both of you come up with. Riley.
Yeah.
Make your main case on why Mario 64,
yeah,
is the one game that everyone out there, whether you're the hardcore gamer, whether you're the 50-year-old person sitting with three kids, whether you're a 6-year-old just now picking up a Switch to play Fortnite,
sure,
why they should be thankful to play Mario 64.
Sure. So let's go back to the very early days of gaming. It was the dream of every single developer that was making video games, even in the Atari days, to have games that were in full 3D environments. But the processing power wasn't there to do that yet. The technology had not been there to fully embrace what developers really wanted to do, even way back in the 70s, in the late 70s. And you can get a sense that people wanted to do 3D if you look at games like Star Wars, which came out right when the first movie came out around that time, and it used vector-based graphics to kind of do a pseudo 3D kind of thing. And so from those early days, developers, you know, even in the Atari age, in the NES days, in the Super Nintendo days, developers did a bunch of things to kind of get pseudo 3D, but even then it wasn't the standard, right? Most games were 2D, and I would argue that even games like Doom and Wolfenstein, which predate Mario 64, and even Star Fox, aren't truly 3D in the sense of how limited they are, and in the sense of the technical makeup of those games. Like, Wolfenstein and Doom are, I don't consider technically 3D because they use a bunch of, they use a lot of sprites and technical ways like sprite scaling and things to make it seem like you're in a 3D environment when you're really not. And by the time the mid-90s came around, there was a sense that 3D was going to be the standard going forward. And for a long time, people now kind of forget, but 3D was the only kind of standard of video games. People thought that games just went from 2D to 3D, and why would anybody want to go back to 3D? But in the mid-90s, a bunch of different developers, you know, while they got a sense of that 3D was going to be the standard going forward, the industry had not yet figured out how to create a 3D world that was fleshed out and felt completely natural to play in before Mario 64. You did have things like Crash Bandicoot, but like I said, that was pseudo 3D in the sense that the game was made up of 3D models. Well, some of the characters and some of the environments were made of 3D models, but it played exactly like a 2D game. There wasn't a full free range of motion. Similarly with Resident Evil, that's another 3D game that came out the same year, 1996, but they still hadn't figured out how to make movement feel good in that game. I mean, the first game had tank controls, which are, I think they were serviceable for the time, but just in the sense that it's one of the only series that I can think of that used tank controls, and that definitely wasn't the standard going forward. And that's because Mario 64 came out and showed the entire industry how to do 3D. They invented concepts that we completely take for granted and that are used in every single game that you can think of. At least if a game is set in a 3D environment, it takes inspiration from Mario 64. The reason for that, like I mentioned in my opening statement, is the free roaming camera, which allows the developers to create a more expansive 3D environment and create a world, a sense that a world is happening, a sense that you're inhabiting a world. And
multiple worlds, in fact.
Yeah, multiple worlds. And so I think for that reason, Mario 64 set the standard for 3D games. It set the standard for an entire industry. And there are many developers out there that point to this game as being a source of inspiration. In fact, Michael, I know how much you love Psychonauts, and I found an interview. Well, not technically, it wasn't an interview, but they included parts of an interview in this article that I can send to you, where Tim Schafer says that Mario 64 was the... Let me find the exact quote.
Can you also give me where the interview is from so I can properly also source it?
Yeah, it's from a place called VG247. I can't find the exact Here we go. Here's the quote. It was like an epiphany. That's what I would say. Mario 64 was an epiphany. And the thing about Mario 64 is not only did it set the standard for 3D games going forward, it also, if you go back and play that game, it completely holds up. Where if you go back and play other platformers or other games that came out 10, 15 years after this game, they don't hold up as well as Mario 64 does. It was just a complete revolution in the industry. And immediately, the industry turned from an industry that was struggling to figure out how to do 3D to an industry that knew what to do going forward. In much of the way that Nintendo revolutionized the gaming industry in the 80s with the NES and kind of revived it from death, I see this as Nintendo revolutionizing the games industry again and setting the template going forward. And yeah, that's basically my main case.
I really like your case. I think there's a lot of stuff that could be said about Mario 64 having an influence on gaming as it is now and how it shaped that future. It walked so other games could run.
Absolutely.
The only thing I do think you, at the beginning of your case, you spent a lot of time talking about other games, and I think that might have hurt it a little bit to me, instead of just continuing to talk about the greatness of Mario 64 itself. So that's my only thing there. Michael, do you have anything to say? Any compliments, complaints, nitpicks, questions on Riley's case?
How dare you Psychonauts against me like that?
That's something else, by the way. I kind of given her points because I appreciate taking shots at each other on this podcast for these specific episodes. So, Riley, great job.
All right. Thank you.
Michael, if you want to take some shots as well, you can to Mario 64. Here is your platform.
I mean, mine's a little more laser focused. I don't have to worry about going on a tangent like some folks.
Oh, okay. All right.
Michael, you want to just go ahead and get into yours?
You're right. So with Metal Gear, I mean, we're talking about two legendary franchises. Let's not kid ourselves. Everything rightly said was correct. You know, Mario had changed. Mario 64 changed the industry for the better. I mean, we've had games on the PlayStation. I forget which game it was. Oh, I wish I could remember. That got a bad rap from, I believe, IGN of all places, because they used a second thumbstick to control the camera, and it was so new that they docked it points because they couldn't get used to the controls. And we all know 64 only had one control stick. So yeah, I agree. Mario changed platforms for the better, but Metal Gear has changed gaming in general for the better. From his day of a top-down action espionage to Metal Gear Solid 2, which completely changed not only what the franchise would be going forward, but video games in general and its scope, its ability to tell stories, cinematics, and the technology that it used. Metal Gear Solid was one of the first to truly take advantage of 3D. It used both side-scrolling and top-down in order to tell its story, show off its design, show its characters, and gave players more freedom than what even Mario 64 was able to do. So from just a standpoint alone, technology-wise, the Metal Gear Solid franchise has done so much more than what Mario 64 was capable of finishing, of even doing, that I do believe that the Metal Gear franchise on its own stands up as a far more superior franchise that we should all be thankful for. Because not only has the franchise moved in a way for 3D, but with cinematic storytelling, it was able to do full-blown voice casting, full-blown cinematics, and not just a quick text box with no voices. Congratulations, Mario. Ooh, good job. You have text and sounds. Banjo-Kazooie was already doing that. With Metal Gear Solid, we got full voice casting. We're talking full body animation, full voice, even an opening cinematic with music a la James Bond style. And all of this was from Hideo Kojima himself, inspired from the movie The Great Escape, which was done in an interview with, I think, Retro Gaming Magazine. Hold on, let me see if I got that correct.
I also don't want to add on to your case too much, but since you did bring it up, isn't there also some at least references to Escape from New York and Escape from LA?
Yeah, that's actually where Snake himself came from. Yeah, the character himself came from Snake. What was his name?
Snake Plissken.
Plissken. Yeah.
Kurt Russell, who honestly still, like, he's aged a little bit, but he's still Kurt fucking Russell.
Yeah, no, if they did a remake, they could still use him. Like, nobody would blink an eye. But yeah, that's actually where the character Snake came from. So that alone, so taking live action cinematic films and transitioning that into full 3D with character models all unique from one another, set up in a realistic world with RAM technology that was not seen in that level at the time, shows not only was Hideo Kojima and his team able to push technology forward, but storytelling as well, from their ability to use not only the characters but atmosphere to give you a sense of scope, time, and place.
I have some retorts, if the honorable judge will let me.
Let me just go ahead and say, Michael, I really like your case as well. I will never not enjoy when somebody praises the legendary Hideo Kojima. So fantastic there. Also, I love the shots towards Riley's case there a little bit in there. It wasn't along the lines of Riley pulling out Psychonauts, but it was still really good. Also, I really enjoyed how you brought up the fact that Metal Gear has that cinematic focus, and we look at video games today with how it wants to be more of that. We look at the God of Wars and the Uncharteds. So it's a very interesting aspect you brought up there. Riley, you said you had some retorts.
I do. So, Michael, you mentioned that Metal Gear was the game that truly pushed 3D forward. And I just wanted to point out that this game, Metal Gear Solid, came out a full 2 years after Mario 64. I'm just saying, while I do think that Metal Gear Solid did do some things to push it forward, I do not think that Metal Gear Solid pushed 3D forward as much as Mario 64 did. And the other thing that I would say is that while there's no doubt that Metal Gear Solid was one of the first games to create a sense of story and atmosphere and world, I would say that the lasting impact of Mario 64 on the game industry as a whole is far greater than Metal Gear Solid, because you did mention that Metal Gear Solid at the time used a lot of things that we would consider antiquated today, especially extra long cinematic cutscenes. While they were impressive for the time, they just do not age well, I think. And I think the lasting impact of having a fully explorable 3D world, as Taylor said, multiple fully explorable 3D worlds with a free-roaming camera and a character that controls really well, such as Mario, I think that has a little bit more impact. I mean, you can trace the legacy from Mario 64 to something like GTA 3 to something all the way now to Breath of the Wild and things that we would consider some of the best games of all time. And so I think that's why I have a little bit of a better case.
Well, I mean, well, I can answer that. Well, sure, Mario did well with controlling a character in 3D. That's really about it. Metal Gear Solid pushed far more than that. They pushed what graphics can do. They pushed the particles that it can use on the PlayStation, mind you, which I believe at the time was stronger than the 64 because it was CD based. But it pushed what you could do with particles, again, that rain effect, and the way the water looks in the game is just phenomenal, even by today's standards. Like, going back to PlayStation, like, when you see the way water was done on a PlayStation and you put Metal Gear Solid in there, it looks next gen. It looks phenomenal. And it pushed against cinematic storytelling, like storytelling in general. This showed that you can't have a serious story and tone. Again, yeah, we had Banjo-Kazooie and Mario where it was like silly, colorful fun for everybody. But Metal Gear Solid, and the reason we should be grateful for it, is that it pushed narrative in gaming. It pushed characters. It pushed design. It pushed levels. It did more than just do fine with a camera that Mario 64 did phenomenally. I will give it that. But Metal Gear Solid has done so much more than just control a camera in 3D space. It gave us way more when it came to atmosphere, storytelling, even the music.
I just want to give a little context. I completely understand where you're coming from, but it seems like you're really discounting the camera and making it seem like that's not a big deal. When every single game that's in 3D nowadays uses that control scheme, it is the default standard, and it did not exist before Mario 64. Mario 64 actually invented something that became a complete standard for the entire industry, basically. And so you can have your fancy particle effects, you can have all that, but I will say Mario 64 walked Metal Gear Solid, I won't say it ran, but it walked alongside a little bit further because it had that push from Mario 64 to go in that direction. And also, I don't think that Metal Gear Solid would have been as big of a hit I imagine a scenario where Mario 64 doesn't come out and the industry didn't learn about, how to make a 3D game, basically. And it could have really flopped. I mean, people forget in the early 3D era, there were lots of like really good franchises, which even at that time, Metal Gear was a game on the NES or a game series on the NES before the Metal Gear Solid series. But so many of those series flopped and just had really bad 3D ports or 3D movements into 3D. It was a very awkward time for that. And so, yeah.
I mean, that's fair.
I need to establish order a little bit here. Michael, I will give you one last retort, then we got to move on.
Okay. No, I'm saying, I'm not trying to dismiss the camera. I'm just saying that Metal Gear as a whole, as a franchise, has changed the industry for the better. I mean, yeah, it could continue to use the tank camera-esque controls. I mean, yeah, I'm not disregarding what Mario has done, but Metal Gear has done so much. It's because of that we have Splinter Cell and Far Cry and Gears of War. Like, multiple developers, such as Clint Hawkins, who was a designer on Splinter Cell, the original Splinter Cell, the one everybody loves, and Far Cry 2, which people still argue is the best Far Cry in the franchise, that every stealth action game owes its existence to the success of Metal Gear. Metal Gear has done so much for the industry that developers to this day still see that as an inspiration and continue to push the stealth genre forward.
I really love how both of you just brought in some quotes, some facts, some sources coming into this. I'm grinning into ear to ear. Like, you guys both crushed this to me. I think both of you bring up fantastic points. And before we go into the categories here, I just want to talk about both your cases and something I'm surprised both of you didn't bring up for each of your case. Riley, I thought you did a fantastic job talking about the influence that Mario 64 had technically. And Michael, you did it from a cinematic story standpoint. And the funny thing is one thing can be true and so could the other. And both of these franchises, they're such good picks because they are so damn influential, right? And just to add on to this, Riley, I'm surprised you didn't bring this up, how every Mario game since 64 has tried to copy 64.
Yeah.
To varying degrees of success. With a lot of them working, with some of them not working all too great. And Michael, I am surprised you didn't go too much into the later Metal Gear games as much as talking about just these setting up how storytelling really influences the later Metal Gear games. But I thought you guys crushed it. I do have some questions for both of you. neither of you know what these questions are. I found this topic to be really interesting because it applies to a wide variety of gaming as a whole. After all, it's why everyone should be thankful for your game or game franchise. So here's my question. We can talk forever about your pick and how it appeals to everyday gamers. But why should casual gamers, who aren't totally in the loop on the industry, be thankful for your game or game franchise? Riley, we'll start with you.
Oh, this is so easy. the reason that casual gamers should be thankful for this game is, first of all, a casual gamer can go back and play this game relatively easy. They have many, many options to do so. It depends on what you mean by casual. But there are many ways to go back to this
game. I mean, people who won't typically listen to a podcast about people talking about video games. I'm talking about your older uncle or cousin that, yeah, I play video games. I play Call of Duty sometimes or something like that.
Yeah.
That's the kind of person I'm talking about. Or I play Madden, that kind of deal.
Yeah, well, the reason that I think casual gamers should be thankful for this game is, first of all, it's really easy to go back to and really holds up to this day and is really inviting for just about anybody. The other thing is that, like I said, it influenced 3D. Just the concept of 3D, I mean, we tend to forget. It's so easy to forget that it's that 3D in video gaming is just a given. But if Mario 64 hadn't set that template, who knows how far that advanced us in terms of years, in terms of the industry trying to figure out how to work around 3D when the entire industry had been focused around perfecting 2D games. And so if somebody plays Madden or Call of Duty or any game like that, those games are all in 3D and they all have a free roaming camera. And so that is why every casual gamer, those are the two reasons I think that every casual gamer should be thankful for my pick. And I will say that to go against Michael's pick, I feel like the impact of Metal Gear Solid is only really appreciated by people that are really into video games. I see Metal Gear Solid as a very... It's a lot of people like it, but I think it's a very niche thing. We're talking about Mario here. The character that everybody knows Mario, whether they're a hardcore gamer or don't play games at all. Everybody knows Mario. And the other thing is, while this game did not give Mario his voice, I believe Charles Martinet voiced Mario in a... what is it? Where's Mario in that computer game? But I think that this game is the game that introduced Mario's voice. I mean, that classic Mario voice to most people. I mean, I'm pretty sure that that PC game at the time was pretty, you know, kind of obscure. So just from that angle, right, I think that's why casual gamers should appreciate Mario 64. Be thankful for Mario 64.
Yeah, and also to be fair, I still believe there's some problems there with Mario 64's camera, but I kind of get I know where you're coming from.
Sure.
It's like, I don't think you're 100% right, but like there's so much of an influence on it, and it, you know.
Well, can I
see where you're going, essentially.
Can I address that, actually? Because I do think
yes.
that, there are problems with the camera, but it invented the idea that other games could eventually perfect, and the industry eventually did perfect it. This was their first shot at it, and it...
That's where I kind of didn't want to correct you when you were talking about it. It's kind of a free form. Like, it's not, like, totally, but it was basically one of the first games to do it,
yeah.
So it is what it is. So I didn't want to correct you on that front.
Yeah, and that... everybody knows how expansive, you know, Mario 64 was for the time. And the idea that of the free roaming camera allowed... it's one of the things that makes me consider this really the first 3D game of all time. I mean, a lot of people don't consider it the first 3D game of all time, but I consider it the first 3D game of all time because it gave you the tools to navigate a 3D environment in a way that felt fun. It allowed them to create, for the time, an expansive 3D environment with tons of secrets. And that idea of being able to roam around and do what felt like anything for the time, you know, do anything, go anywhere, do whatever you want, that is a huge design influence on, you know, some of the most important games of all time, including, you know, GTA 3, like I said, and Breath of the Wild, which some people, even Ocarina of Time, I'm sure those games were developed pretty much in tandem, and I think the things that were learned on Mario 64 really pushed forward Ocarina of Time. Those are three games right there that are considered the best game of all time by different people. And so Mario 64 was the game that allowed those games to take what they learned on that game and bring it and make those games as good as they are. And in fact, while I'm saying that, many people consider Mario 64 itself to be one of the greatest games of all time. And so there's this game, which people consider to be the greatest game of all time, and it influenced numerous games that people consider to be their personal favorite, their personal game of all time.
I just want to mention here, I'm only taking the statements about the camera into effect on that as much because, you know,
sure,
we had our main case and we're into the questions phase, so.
Sure.
No offense there, but I can't be, you know, giving you guys a third and fourth case.
Sure.
Michael, why should casual gamers be so appreciative? Why should they be so thankful for the Metal Gear Solid franchise?
So, stealth games are not really the friendliest to get into. It can be quite daunting knowing that if you mess up, your game could be over. You know, it's one thing that a lot of people complain about, like action games that instantly put in stealth because they make an instant lose. Metal Gear doesn't do that to you. It gives you a chance. And I think for casual players, if they were to play Metal Gear Solid and Metal Gear Solid 2 and any other Metal Gear Solids, it would ease them into the stealth genre while also giving them a mature cinematic experience. And as they continue to go through the Metal Gear series, from Metal Gear 2, Solid Snake, Sons of Liberty, so forth, so on, to even 4 and 5, they will start to see more of a blend of action and stealth, which allows them to do both. So they can actually ease into the stealth genre and still have fun as if they're playing Call of Duty, because there are times where you can just go into a place in Splinter Cell and just, you know, go haywire. It gives you that freedom, gives you that choice. And I think that's why a lot of casuals would be grateful for Metal Gear Solid, because it could bring them to something like Splinter Cell and Splinter Cell franchise, because like that's how I got into it. I thought I was afraid of going to Splinter Cell, but you know, seeing that stealth game, easing into stealth games with a game that does not punish you for not being that good in stealth could give you the confidence to experiment with more games and more stealth games, including stuff like Gears of War or Far Cry 2 that we mentioned earlier, or even Silicon Knights games. Metal Gear Solid can turn casuals from just playing Sonic and Mario for the cuteness to playing something Gears of War or even Crysis, because maybe now they're into more heavy games when it comes to story. Now, I'm not going to say mature, because some of these games are pretty immature, but it will bring them to the other genres rather than just platforms. It can really open them up to more games.
Michael, I have a question for you.
Hopefully I have an answer.
Do you think casual gamers are going to think it's fun to play the Psycho Mantis fight where they have to take their controller out of the first port and put it into the second port? Do you think...
I'm going to be honest, though, if anybody doesn't like that, I probably think less of you.
But we're talking about casual gamers.
We're talking about casuals.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying in general.
Like I said, it could turn them onto these things. It's not a guarantee. You know, Mario games can be difficult. So to ask a casual to carefully time their jumps and whatnot with moving platforms can be a little daunting, just like stealth games. But I do think that Splinter Cell can help push people into other genres. Like, it can help them push them.
Metal Gear?
Say what?
You mean Metal Gear can push people into other genres?
You said Splinter Cell.
Did I say Splinter Cell? Oh, yeah. Sorry. Metal Gear can push you into other stuff like Splinter Cell and Far Cry 2. Because if you start with the first one, it's a top-down, so you don't have to worry about fiddling around with the camera so much and all this other complicated material. And then when you move on to Metal Gear Solid 2, you get this feeling of advancement. Like, oh, I'm moving from this 2D sprite kind of thing, top-down sprite, to full-blown 3D. And you feel good about yourself because you feel like you're actually advancing into something more. I mean, you start off with just Mario 64. Ooh, good night to that, because, you know, starting with 3D and dealing with that camera can be quite daunting to a casual.
The thing about both your picks as well is Metal Gear as a franchise has had ups and downs. So while you also had some advantages by talking about progress, I love how Riley, I know she hasn't, but she can just clap back and be like, well, you know what? Kind of like she said before, though, Mario 64 is one of the best games ever made. So it's kind of funny how both of your picks are, that there's so many rebuttals to both of them. I guess my second question here, Michael, I guess this is my final one because you already kind of answered my second one. It was basically, I was asking both of you to trash the other's pick. Like, why is yours just simply better?
Oh, we're going to do that organically.
Both of you already did that organically. So I'm going to move on to my final question for you both. And this one's a lot nicer. Let's end the show on a bright note, everybody. Why are you specifically thankful for your game or game franchise? Michael, we'll start with you. Why are you specifically? Give me that personal story. Give me the specifics of a game. We're not talking about tech stuff anymore. We're not talking about how cinematics influence movies. Why did you pick this personally?
You know, it's funny that you said the technical aspect, because I love computers. I had a love for movies as a kid, you know, cartoons, and, you know, I love 2D animation. I love 3D animation. Pixar was like my favorite studio growing up as a kid. I remember seeing Toy Stories in theaters and thought, oh my goodness, this is amazing. So really for me, the reason for picking it is the technical aspect. It is the storytelling. It's the point that I got to see video games advancing past just colorful cartoony mascots. I felt like video games were growing, even though they had these kind of things in the past. But as a kid, and as growing up as a teen and getting older as a teenager, I was born in the 80s, you know, late 80s, so I was a 90s kid. So all that stuff that was in the past, I missed out on. So for me, it felt like going from, because I had a 64, you know, I was playing Donkey Kong and Banjo-Kazooie and Mario. So, you know, I had that bright, colorful, cartoony thing going on. I had a Sega Genesis and a Dreamcast. So I, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog. We all had that, right? We all had that great mascot we love. And this is even before, you know, we get into like Spyro and stuff. I picked the Metal Gear franchise because I really do believe that it is the pinnacle when we talk about the advancement of video games. I really do believe that the Metal Gear Solid franchise is the pinnacle of video games advancing and maturing.
That's an excellent explanation. Riley, why did you personally
I gotta say,
Mario 64?
Michael, I admire your passion for the Metal Gear Solid series, and I don't think that that's something that I can exactly match with Mario 64, because to be honest, I was born when this game came out. I was 4 months old when this game came out, so I was not there to see the impact. Well, I was technically there, but I was not capable mentally of understanding the impact of Mario 64 on the gaming industry at the time. But I do remember playing this game as a kid. I remember the reason I think I picked this game is because of its legendary and almost mythic status in the video game industry. It's a game a lot like Ocarina of Time. Those two games, to me, no other games stand out in terms of they almost feel untouchable. They almost feel like games that everybody can agree on. Games that unite all of the gaming industry, and where we all have different opinions, we've all played different things, we all have our own version of what's the best. But almost every gamer, if you're listening to this podcast, if you're into gaming at all, everybody can go back and look at those games and agree on that those were, at the time, the pinnacle of video game achievement, I'll say. Those games set the bar so high, and there are countless people who have stories about playing Mario 64 and having their eyes opened about what video games could be, and it turned people from that might have been casual gamers at the time, and maybe their parents bought them a Nintendo 64, and they played Mario 64, and their eyes were opened, and their brain blew out from the back of their head, and they thought, wow, video games can be so much more than what I thought they could be. And the other thing is, I think it influenced a whole generation of gamers because it appealed to kids. Metal Gear Solid, well, I think it had some advances to the industry. It didn't appeal to kids, and so the nostalgia and the mythic status of Mario 64 and Ocarina of Time, I don't think quite translates to Metal Gear Solid. To be quite honest, I think it's kind of hard to get into the series even now. You kind of have to be able to put up with a lot of bullshit to get into Metal Gear Solid, to get to the good stuff. And I don't think Mario 64 has any bad stuff. I mean, maybe that's looking back with rose-tinted glasses, but I don't think so. I remember playing this game. I was 8, so don't put me in jail, on an emulator with one of my best friends of all time. That is why I think everybody... That's why I'm thankful for Mario 64, because it created a whole generation of people who love and care about games, and also pushed the industry forward, shoved the industry forward into 3D, said, this is what we're going to do from now on. Anything that you were trying before is not going to fly. The tank controls aren't going to fly anymore. The fixed camera angles aren't going to fly anymore. If you do that, it's going to feel dated. And so that is why, personally, I am thankful for Mario 64.
If both of you are up for it, would you mind that acting as your closing statements? I feel like both of you had excellent reasons to why you selected that. Or do either of you have a closing statement that you would like to give?
I rest my case.
Michael?
Riley, I respect everything you said, because, like I said, I had the 64. I had Mario 64. I thought it was cool. But that's just the thing. You're thinking of the kids. You're not thinking of the industry. You kept saying that, oh, it appeals to kids, the kids, the kids. Metal Gear Solid showed that it was more than just kiddie games out in the industry, that you can do more, that you can do mature without having unnecessary swearing and nudity and what have you. Like, some games would just rest on that alone and be like, see how mature we are, we're a rated M game. But at least Metal Gear Solid was like, hey, we're rated M, yeah, but, you know, we also have, like, espionage, political statements, stuff like that, with a side of goofiness. But my closing statement would be that, as a whole, both games have had a great impact. But Mario has not had the impact that Metal Gear has had as a whole, with the industry, with people growing up with it, and with people even to this day still using Metal Gear as a pinnacle, as a blueprint for how they want to build their story, their characters, their mechanics, and even the world that they have with their lore.
This is so difficult. Why the hell did I agree to that? I don't think there's a wrong answer at all. I really don't. I could see anybody coming in here, listening to you, both of your cases, and going, okay, Mario 64 is the right fucking answer. And I could also see, nope, Metal Gear Solid, such an impact. Both of these game franchises, both of the game, like Mario 64 and Metal Gear Solid as a franchise, if we didn't have those games in the industry, if they didn't happen, gaming quality as a whole is so much worse.
Absolutely.
Like, these two things are so fantastic. Like, there is no really faults to either of them, other than if you want to get into nitpicky stuff about the actual games themselves, getting into, you know, maybe Metal Gear Solid 4 has a lot of damn cutscenes.
It does.
Or something like that.
It does.
Or the Mario 64 camera isn't necessarily perfect, or the controls are a little wonky, but it is what it is. So, I think, Riley, you won the questions. I do. I think you won the questions round. And I believe both of you really had a wash when it came to the opening statement. So I'm kind of looking at this with the main case, and I'm like, who had the better main case? And I'm going to go ahead and say, I want to give this to Michael. I think as a whole, as what Metal Gear has done for the gaming industry, what it has done for gamers, the only thing I think that it could be not for slightly is, you are correct, and it doesn't really appeal as much to casual gamers, but you still see the impact of Metal Gear to all sorts of other franchises out there. So for that, I'm going to award the win here to Michael. But man, this flip-flopped at least 15 times in my head over the last 10 minutes.
Well, there goes my winning streak, but congratulations. I don't agree with it, but
you'll somehow still get to fight.
I respect...
By the way, hold on. Before this gets turned into a... this has nothing to do with our clash at the stash with Resident Evil and Souls. Absolutely nothing. I'm not appealing it. I'm going to drop the appeal that I should have won just to prove it.
I respect your decision making as a judge.
I will say this, Riley. I think I probably went with yours if you mentioned the camera stuff in the actual main case instead of in the questions.
Sure.
So, Michael, you have won this episode of Clash of the Stash. You are 1-0. Riley is 1-1. The race to 5 wins is on. I also have a win, by the way. I'm 1-1. I beat Tristan in the last episode, where Tristan went on a historic rant when he lost. So, Michael, take it away. You're going to close us out here.
All right. Well, first off, I actually wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I thought I was going to stumble over my feet when I found out that Riley was going with Super Mario 64. Do you have any idea how hard it is to go up against Super Mario 64?
No, both of you picked terrible picks. Like, not terrible picks, fantastic picks, yeah. Which made it terrible for me.
Yeah.
Like, this was terrible. This is a horrible experience for me.
So hats off to Riley for giving me a tough one to think about. It took me all week to come up with this, by the way.
I seriously do appreciate you guys pulling out quotes and all sorts of different things to bring up. And also, Riley bringing in Psychonauts, knowing Michael's love for it, and throwing it in his face.
Yeah, that was horrible.
Savageness, and I loved it.
Michael, I gotta say, real quick, when Taylor told me that you were doing Metal Gear Solid, I was like, got it in the bag. This is so easy. And then when we were sitting down to record, I was like, oh shit, he brought the fire. So, hats off to you.
All right, so with that, I guess I'll do the outros. All right, first off, I want to thank my fellow co-hosts for joining me this week. Of course, I also want to thank everyone for listening in. We truly appreciate you all listening, whether there's 3 of you or 300 of you. We are very grateful that we can continue to do this, and we hope you enjoy hearing our little spats over which game is better than who. And also, the Nerd Stash Show is going on a short break after this, so we can spend a little extra time with our families for Thanksgiving. So there won't be a new episode on November 29th. But of course, after that, we will be back. So we hope you enjoy your Turkey Day, if you do so believe in doing such a thing. And if you are working, stay safe out there. People can get quite hysterical when it comes to these holidays. Nerd Talk Movies has some pre-recorded episodes in the pipeline, so that podcast should air on its usual time slots, which is Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern. The Nerd Stash Show will be back on December 6th at 8 p.m. with our predictions for the Game Awards 2021. And if you have not seen it yet, those nominations are out. And this could have been an episode all on its own today, because man,
Guardians got screwed. Guardians got screwed out of a nomination here.
Yeah, I think that's bullshit.
I don't understand. How did Resident Evil Village, like, I know I just did an episode where I was like, Resident Evil is the best. How the fuck did Resident Evil Village get on here when Guardians, you know, came back from the dead? This game was dead, gone, buried, and then it got put in a pet cemetery, got brought back to life.
Who knows, maybe one day we can get nominated for Content Creator of the Year.
Yeah, with this professional podcast we got going on. Yeah, we definitely will. It's anytime soon.
But yeah, okay. Again, this could be an old episode on its own.
Yeah.
But yes, the Nerd Stash Show will be back on December 6th at 8 with our predictions for the Game Awards 2021. But until then, we will see you all later.